Hello, beautiful people. My guests today are Colin and Samir. And Colin and Samir are two guys who originally started creating lacrosse content in 2011, created a company called the Lacrosse Network, and eventually sold that. Then they started creating content with just them two. And now, 4 years later, their content has started to take off. I think at this time of the recording, they have 265,000 subscribers on YouTube where they discuss the creator economy. And they do a talk show, basically, of what's the latest things happening in the world of creators. And it's really cool to hear their stories and hear everything they've gone through. In this conversation, we went deep on lacrosse, deep on their background, and also deep on the creator economy. I hope you guys enjoyed this one as much as I enjoyed recording it. And if you have any thoughts about this episode, let me know on Twitter at @HeyDannyMiranda. Also tag at Colin and Samir. I'm sure they'll appreciate it as well. And let's get to the episode with none other than Colin and Samir.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
So, Colin and Samir, thank you for coming on the podcast. I got to be honest, when I first stumbled across your content, I was like, oh no, these guys are just trying to take advantage of the creator economy movement in some capacity. They're riding that wave. But then when I dug deeper, I was like, wow, these guys have actually been putting in the work for a long, long period of time. And so it was cool to see that progression and from my own psyche. And I'm wondering, you know, how you guys think about the creator economy, which I'm sure we'll get into in this episode. But before we do that, I want to start with lacrosse. You guys, that's near and dear to your heart. And I'm curious why you both were so drawn to lacrosse.
Yeah. So first of all, what you just mentioned around like how long we've been at it. Like, it's funny, like the term creator economy was not something that was getting thrown around even a year or 2 years ago. But now it's such a hot term. And what you just mentioned about lacrosse, like that's how we started in the space in 2010, started on YouTube making videos about lacrosse. So, you know, to back up and give a little context to that, I grew up here in Los Angeles, and, you know, there was different sports rolling out at my high school, and a couple of my friends had played lacrosse, and lacrosse came to the school, and I thought it was interesting to do something new and decided to play. But as I started playing, I fell in love with not only the sport, but like the community, and I couldn't get enough of it. And I quite literally could not get enough of it because it was like very low exposure, right? Like lacrosse was not constantly on television. There was a magazine that came to my house once a month. Like that was the extent of how I could connect with the community. And that was my experience in Los Angeles. And that plays a big part into what happened later, but I'll let Colin talk about his experience.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey on the East Coast, and, you know, my brother played lacrosse. My uncle played lacrosse. Lacrosse was much more established. I started playing in the fourth grade and really just gravitated to it because honestly, you know, as a smaller guy, like you don't need to be super athletic to be successful within lacrosse. Like you can have good stick skills, good vision, and that can take you a really long way. And it's a super creative sport. And so I really fell in love with it. And then, you know, I wanted to be recruited to play Division I college lacrosse really badly. Like that was my goal in high school, and lacrosse player was my one and only identity. And I didn't end up getting recruited to play college lacrosse. And that kind of shook my world a little bit. I had to reshape my identity a little bit. And I ended up going to University of Colorado, not to play lacrosse, but ended up joining the team and sort of getting the experience I always wanted within club lacrosse. So not NCAA Division I, but I loved the experience so much, fell back in love with the sport. And then when I graduated, wanted to tell stories about the team that I played for and started making videos about that team.
So yeah. When I went to college, I played club lacrosse as well, which playing club lacrosse is like the epitome of just like being really into something and like a niche community, because we're all paying to play when you play club lacrosse. So it's like you have to be really into it to play, but you're surrounded by a bunch of other people who are really into it. And then when you go to tournaments and you play other schools like University of Colorado or University of Arizona or USC, you're like, so many people are into this sport. But again, it's like such limited media and exposure. There's no connective tissue in the sport. And so I studied film in college, and I also coached lacrosse at a local high school in Santa Cruz, which is where I went to school. And I was just in love with the community. And when I graduated, you know, I wanted to solve that problem that I felt like there was no media and no connective tissue in the sport of lacrosse. And I felt like I could do that through video. Now, you know, originally the idea was like, maybe I could start something like the Tennis Channel, and like, I could call someone and maybe I could start a TV channel, right? That was like the first idea. And then over time you start to realize like, that's never going to happen. But there's no one to stop me from just making it a YouTube channel. Like, I could just make a YouTube channel. And so I called it the Lacrosse Network, which literally was like modeled after the NFL Network. I was like, I'm going to make that for lacrosse. And like Colin mentioned, at the same time that happened, he was making this docuseries about the University of Colorado lacrosse team. And it's such a small community. There was only so much happening in the community, right? Like, there's only so much content being made. There's only so many people who cared about telling stories in this community. And that's how we met. And we started distributing Colin's show. And building that network was, in 2010 and 2011, was one of the most unique experiences. I think like being on YouTube at that time was really new. Uploading content at that time was new. Doing that in sports media was new. Adding video to lacrosse was new. So everything we were doing was new. And that was a really exciting experience and a really scary experience at the same time. And I was mentioning this last night to a friend, but I think you're only lucky enough to be that naive once as an entrepreneur. And when you have that naivete, you don't know that you have it. But when you look back, you're like, wow, I would never do that again. But thank God I was that naive at that time.
Yeah. And I definitely want to get into the Lacrosse Network and building that up. But, you know, you guys, Colin, you mentioned how it was your mission to play D1 lacrosse, and in high school, you actually had 42 goals your senior year. So that's pretty impressive.
Whoa.
And, wow, and Samir, yeah, not too bad yourself. You played Pacific on February 13th, 2010 and had 5 goals and 5 assists. You're so
right. Yeah. 10 points?
10 points in one game.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Go on.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I never knew that.
Yeah.
So how similar is getting in the flow while playing lacrosse similar to filmmaking?
That's first of all, great research. Second of all, great question. You know, it's what's funny is like, I actually, I remember that game so well that you just mentioned, just because like everything was coming second nature in that game. And I remember, I mean, it was like, now it's like 10 years ago and it's like reliving the glory days, right? But it's in my mind, I remember playing that game and not feeling like I was trying to do any of it. And it kind of just flowed. And I think the games after that, I was so hyper-conscious of it that I had a terrible season, because that game was so perfect for me that I became way too self-aware of the rest of the games. And I think that was the interesting thing, was like going into that game, I had done so much preparation that summer and like I was so ready to play and so excited to play that it all was flowing in a way of just like second nature. And I actually think it's not a bad question, but creativity is something pretty similar to that, where it's just like, if you're not thinking too much about it and you prepare yourself to be in a position where it can flow out of you, it doesn't even feel like you're trying. But actually being a content creator on YouTube, all the data, the analytics, the audience, the pressure of advertisers, it makes you incredibly self-aware and super self-conscious about your creativity. So it's a really good question and a really good analogy.
I think another parallel that we talk a lot about too is confidence. Like Samir and I say a lot of times when we look back at our playing careers, we didn't always have the confidence to take the shot. Like there was that guy on the team who always took the shot, like took a bunch of shots per game and was always the one who was like, I want the ball in my stick when the game's on the line. And that wasn't necessarily us.
Yeah.
And I think both of us look back at our playing careers and think, you know, that's something we wish we would have changed, was being more open to taking the shot and potentially failing.
Yeah.
And I think once we started working together, we were more, we had more confidence together to take more shots, and failure didn't like hurt as much. It wasn't as scary.
Yeah. What was interesting was like failure on the field, meaning like you miss a shot, it like the environment of it, it was really tough. Like your coach would be, someone would yell from the sideline, your whole team would be angry if you took a bad shot, right? Like there was so much pressure to take a good shot. And I think what you start to realize in creativity is like, we've been at this for 10 years and people like yourself are just now taking notice. So think about how many shots we've had to take to get recognized on this platform. And we're still in the early stages, right? And so when you start to realize that, I think as a young athlete, as a young person trying to do anything, I think the best advice we could offer is like, take as many, put yourself in a position to take as many shots as possible without fear. Because that's the reality. Like you have to do that. And even strangely enough, Colin and I, like when we first started building the Lacrosse Network, we would actually play lacrosse a lot more. And I think with a lot more confidence and a lot more fluidity. And we, I think, developed both our like on-screen chemistry and business chemistry, as well as like alongside playing in these like men's league games and like pickup games together playing lacrosse. And so I do think there's a lot of that, like just general chemistry that happens when you have a good team dynamic on the field.
What would you tell yourself if you were speaking to that unconfident version of your lacrosse player in the past?
I would probably say that in order to have a, like to have a shot go in, you're going to have to take 10 shots. So like I used to take like 1 to 2 shots a game max. And sometimes I wouldn't score anything, right? And then like that game, for example, that you mentioned, where I had 5 goals and 5 assists, like it just so happened that those all fell. But the reality is like in a typical game, like you'd probably have to take, you know, 5 shots for one to go in or 10 shots, and then you can get more confident. So that's what I would tell myself. Just like take more shots because the math isn't 1 for 1, right? You're not going to be 1 for 1.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say just don't play it so safe. I remember my coach always used to say, I can count on you because I know you're going to take care of the ball. And taking care of the ball means I'm not going to drop it and I'm not going to throw it away.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to shoot it.
And I'm not going to shoot it either.
Yeah.
So when I get it, I'm going to move it to the next person or move it where it needs to go. But he knows I'm not going to mess up. But that doesn't mean I'm going to do anything really that great either. So I think I would look back and be like, you should probably take a few more risks to try and do some things that are great every once in a while.
I haven't thought about lacrosse stats in 10 years. This is amazing that you just brought that up. Like that's incredible.
Yeah. So continuing on the path, Colin, your first job out of college was working at a front desk. And I'm curious what you learned from that experience at a hotel, front desk at a hotel.
Yeah. So I, you know, coming out of college, I was a economics and Italian double major. And coming out of college, I knew I didn't want to pursue really any career with either of those, but I did have a written blog about my lacrosse team during college. And I really enjoyed the process of putting out original writing and getting comments and feedback from my teammates and from other people who were interested. I even like designed merchandise and we sold t-shirts for that brand. And I love that experience. So when I got out of college, I knew I had to, you know, pay my rent. So I got a job full time at a hotel in Boulder, working at the front desk, just greeting people and checking them in. And I think what that really showed me was what I didn't want to do, and what I did want to do. I think, you know, it was clear to me that even though it was a great job, I didn't want to work at a hotel for the rest of my life. Obviously, I was just using that to pay my bills. But then whatever I did after work was clearly what I did want to do. And after work, I would spend hours and hours filming and editing because I wanted to learn about my camera and about how to edit and tell stories. So much so that there were some nights where I would stay in the lobby of the hotel completely overnight, finishing an episode.
Wow.
Before I sent it to Samir. And then I'd put my suit back on and go to the front desk, just exhausted. And so it was so clear to me that it was like, by having that job, it was apparent to me what I did like to do and what I didn't like to do.
Yeah. And so Samir, while Colin's working at the front desk, you're building the lacrosse network. And at some point you convince Colin to actually move out to LA. I'm curious, what did you say to him to get him to join you in a completely new state, a new environment?
I don't fully remember. I just, to be honest, maybe Colin remembers more. I remember the initial conversations around like distributing the show and like the, that Colin and I kind of went back and forth and on that, I remember that experience, but I just remember my brother was essentially like my advisor in all of this. He was in law school at the time and I'm really close with my brother and I was living with him and I just sat with him one night and I was like, for the success of the company, I have to move Colin out here and I have to have him here. And my brother is like a lot more conservative than me, in certain decision-making, like he's a little bit more risk averse. And he was like, what are you talking about? Like this, you're going to move some guy out here or tell him to move out here. And I was just confident though. I was like, it hinges on the success of this project. That's it, period. End stop. Like, and so when I first started talking to Colin about it, I think Colin was like really open to moving and he was pretty fluid. And at the time he was like, maybe I'll go to San Diego and I could come up to LA a couple times a week. And I think we had just, him and I had talked on the phone a couple of times, but I think that there was also, this moment where, we worked on a project together in Denver, in Colorado, where we met for the first time, or one of the first times, and worked like in person together. And my brother and I showed up. It was like a professional lacrosse team practice, and Colin and his filmmaking partner at the time came to cover it for the Lacrosse Network. And so again, it felt to me like when we met and everything, I was just like, the success of this whole project hinges on having someone like Colin. So. Again, I'll say it one more time, but like you're only lucky enough to be that naive once. And I think between both of us, like that naivete leads to like you just being like, cool, yeah, let's do that. That sounds good.
Yeah, I was pretty open to the opportunity because like I said, I was working at the hotel and I knew that I really enjoyed filmmaking, but I was filmmaking on the side. I wasn't making any money off of it. My first paid gig was that opportunity that Samir talked about, the pro lacrosse team. So that was like a huge milestone for my very new filmmaking career. And I would say that, like, you know, Samir has done what he did with me over and over and over again. Like what he does is generate relationships with people, like see talent, see value, see the future. And then, you know, most likely those people also see some of the future as well and are excited about the opportunity. So like, that's how it's continually worked, is like new people come in the door mainly through Samir.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at Jesse's laughing right now. Our kind of head of production here, who produces and edits the show and everything that we do. And we met him 2 years ago, I think, at a talk that we were giving. And Jesse filmed, you know, a little bit of our talk and DM'd it to me on Instagram. And I think I just responded being like, "This is awesome. You want to come work on some stuff?" And we just started working together, and now, you know, Jesse's with us every day and kind of like a massive part of our team. And it's like my favorite way to meet people is like just like experiencing that energy, like creative energy between, you know, people. And you can kind of just sense it immediately. Again, it's like back to the lacrosse analogy. It's like there's certain people you just have chemistry with. And when you have that, you recognize it's one of the hardest things to find. And so you want to foster that and make sure that like that all works and it all fits together. And creativity is not tennis. It's not like a one person thing. It's like more like lacrosse or soccer, where it's like so many people have to touch the ball before it can go in the goal. So I think building that team is like so important, and it primarily is not based on skill, right? Like Colin didn't go to film school, had pretty limited experience across editing softwares, and became our creative director within, you know, 2 months of meeting him, and immediately was building creative for some of the top brands and leagues in the space. That was better than I think anything we could have ever hired for from a film school or like a design school. So Like it just happens that it's just about like chemistry and energy. If someone really cares, and then like Colin was staying up all night making sure this show was the best it could be. There's like a very few people in the world that would do that.
What are the key attributes you look for when trying to say, okay, this person, I want to join me in the future?
I think it's like, there's a Bruce Lee quote that I loved when I was in college, which was like he has this bit about being like water. Have you heard that? He essentially says like water, when it approaches a rock, it becomes the rock. And when it goes into a cup, it becomes the cup. And essentially suggesting that like everyone should be like water. When they're faced with an obstacle, they should become it and they should go around it and move through it. And I think that to me is like, there's certain people in creativity where creativity is like you're faced with all these blocks constantly, right? There's all these challenges, especially like when we're working in video editing, there's like software challenges, there's problems with clients, there's stuff that's not working, there's feedback, there's all these blocks. And the people that can operate in like a media company, I think are people who can be like water, who can really like look at a problem and like immerse themselves in it, become it, and then move through it. And I think that is those types of people, no matter their skill level, like they're willing to figure it out and they're willing to work through the long nights and the challenges. And that I think creates a collective energy of just, we're here to solve problems and we're here to make really good stuff. And we're here to care about the audience that we're making it for. And that's all that we look for. Like a lot of the people we hire are not experts in their field. They're just like people who have really good energy and are willing to make it happen.
I think that was really important too, when it came to the Lacrosse Network and even now, but with the Lacrosse Network, we were building something that had never been done before. It was this modern day sports network where we have, you know, 5 live pro lacrosse games on our YouTube channel from Friday to Sunday. But then on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, like we have traditional YouTube programming, right? Where it's like Samir and I talking to the audience. So it was this sort of like new hybrid sports model. And when you're doing something that's never been done before, you're going to get hit with roadblocks that have never been hit before as well. So there's no roadmap, right? There's no trajectory. So you just need people that are like willing to, you know, like sometimes do some research or try a bunch of things till it fails, like until you figure it out. But
I also think like Colin and I worked well together because we played, both played lacrosse, which, you know, playing a sport, I had a coach who always used to just say athletes adjust, which I loved that quote. It's just so simple, but it's like, if something happens, like an athlete adjusts, right? If the refs are bad that game, athletes adjust. If like
my coach would always say, handle everything.
Yeah.
And exactly. We had a drill in practice where he would throw bad passes at you and you had to just catch them in school.
Yeah. So that was one thing, is just like, you know, playing a team sport, I think builds you into someone who can do that type of stuff. And then playing lacrosse, which is a sport that gets, you know, is incredibly underserved, typically like not well respected. So you have to deal with a lot of, you know, external pressure of the fact that like what you're doing is not normal and no one really considers it real. So coming to YouTube, it's the exact same thing, right? Like in 2010, uploading videos to YouTube, everyone around you is like, that's dumb and doesn't make any sense. And it's not a real thing to do. So it's that, like, again, like that mentality and the mental fortitude of being like, okay, whatever comes at us, we can handle everything and we can adjust. And then additionally, like we're used to doing something that people don't understand.
So at one point, Samir, your dad, you're sitting at the dinner table with your dad and he asks you, how does this thing work? How are you going to make money? And I was like, wow, has Samir been to my dinner table? Because I've been recording this podcast for the past 9 months and I feel like I have that conversation at least once a week. So talk to me through that conversation with your dad. Maybe it was multiple conversations and what you ended up telling him.
It was a lot of conversations, and I will say credit to my dad. He was like through it all, 100% supportive. I think he's an entrepreneur himself. He's a real like rags to riches story. It's like true, just had to grind it out for years, and found a lot of success. But for him, he was like, you're building an audience. Like these people care about what you're building. And granted, at the time, it was like, you know, 1,000 to 5,000 people max watching our videos. But my dad was like, you got to sell them something. because otherwise I don't understand how this works. Because my pitch to him originally was like, I think we just make these videos and then YouTube pays us. That was what I thought. And that does happen. But when you're making videos for 1 to 5,000 people, YouTube does not pay you very much, right? They pay you pennies and you know, occasionally dollars. So that was a quick realization. But there was two things that I held really strong. One was I said from the beginning, I said, we're building a network that's early. And when companies like Nike get into lacrosse, we will be the only place for them to advertise. So I was kind of like saying, like, this is a play for the future. And the second thing was, I think he was right, which I think Colin and I have realized he typically is when he gives us advice. Two or three years ago, he was like, you guys should start something called the Colin and Samir Show and just set up mics and talk. And we were like, that's crazy. And then now we're doing that. But you know, the other thing was, I think he was right that, you know, we had to start thinking about what we were selling. And I think it was really good, like, entrepreneurial advice to be like, you know, we were obsessed, and I was obsessed with this era of like pre-revenue companies, right? Like Facebook and all these companies, like the way they were talked about was like, oh, don't worry about the money, just build an audience. And that was the same mentality for me. I was like, well, don't worry about the money, we're just building an audience. But for like a real like bootstrapped entrepreneur, I think he was like, you have to do something. So what we did, credit to him, is he let us and our team, myself, Colin, and then we had a third member, Julian, he let us essentially be the creative agency for his clothing company. And so essentially our client was my dad, and we would essentially work on women's fashion projects during the day, and then make lacrosse videos in the evening, and we would split up. Like, sometimes Julian would be shooting a lookbook for my dad's next collection, and then, you know, Colin and I would be working on lacrosse, or I'd be in China with my dad working on production for a women's, you know, fashion collection, and Colin and Julian would be in LA. And so, you know, he really helped us in that, but he pushed us to think about monetization, and that's where we started to pick up a lot of odd jobs. We were like, okay, so who would pay us in this space? And I think that was a really good exercise to learn about what like the market size was and what we were doing. You know, we did all kinds of things. We made a website for a pro lacrosse player. We made stickers for a company. We sold t-shirts to our audience just based on my dad's experience in fashion. So we tried to find every different way. We became like a production company. And so I think he really pushed us to figure out how to make money. And I think that's when we realized, you know, YouTube was not going to be the primary monetization, but it was going to be a path to getting monetization opportunities. But it was grueling and it was challenging, and it, you know, everyone in the company was making hundreds of dollars, right? No one was making in the thousands of dollars, and living in LA on hundreds of dollars is really hard. So,
Colin, was there a level of resentment ever from you because you move across the country, uproot your life, and now working for a fashion company? Or are you just excited to work on your passion and work on filmmaking as well?
No, I was super grateful for the opportunity entirely throughout. And even before I moved out, honestly, I knew that Samir was involved in his dad's fashion company. And that to me was also of interest. Like, you know, I really loved lacrosse, but filmmaking was what I was most interested in, honestly. Lacrosse is what I was using to learn how to become a better filmmaker. And it just so happened it landed me a job at a lacrosse media company. So yeah, I know I was grateful and excited and interested the entire time. And I always said to Samir, like, if this were to end tomorrow, I loved it. I learned so much. That's it.
So let's fast forward to you guys getting acquired by Whistle. Was that a huge, significant moment of elation and excitement? How did you guys take that moment, and take me through the emotions you guys felt?
I think in you know, one sense, it was a moment of elation, but in a larger sense, it was almost like a sigh of relief, as well as like this moment of freedom. So at the time, like, what was interesting was, it was getting really challenging. Like, basically we were paying our bills through my dad's company paying us to do creative work. And at some point, you know, the reality was like, we were doing some creative work, but we were mainly spending time on lacrosse. And so my dad was basically fronting the bills through his company. And at one point in time, he was just like, all right, you gotta like do this on your own or it's not going to work. And at that point in time, we tried many different things. And then I think Colin and I one time went out to lunch and we both talked about like going off to business school or getting mm-hmm. like thinking about like, okay, maybe we just like forget this, you know, like it was cool, but like, it's too hard to make money. Like we have a rabid audience, but we don't know how to monetize it. And granted, this is 2013. So like, again, like no one knew how to monetize things. But we were really close with the team at YouTube at the time, and they would connect us to people and try and help us out. And they wanted to see us succeed. And we got a lot of different emails. And one time we got an email and it felt really different. And so it was during the time where we were trying to evaluate what to do with the company. You know, I had tried to raise capital. No one was interested, not a single person. We had an acquisition offer and it kind of like fell through. It didn't really make sense. And so then, you know, we were just trying to figure out what to do. And we got this email and I got on the call and the founder of this company called Whistle. And he was really legit. And the team that I was talking to, I was like, whoa, these people are legit. And more importantly than ever, it was the first time that I talked to someone on the phone who understood what we were doing. And that was this moment of just like, whoa, there's people who have raised money to do what we're doing and see us as experts in this space. And I think that was this moment of validation of like, oh, what we've done for the past couple of years was not like this complete waste of time. You know, I think we knew that because the audience was so excited about what we were doing, but you know, to have someone in business say to us, like, you guys have done something really legit. And then they flew me out to New York and I brought my dad with me because I was like so excited that this was happening. And my dad was just kind of like, my dad and brother were my advisors. So brought them out and we sat in their office and I was like, this is legit. They have like an office in New York with 20 people. They're raising money. Like they're ready to go. And they're all in on sports media on YouTube. And, you know, they wanted to acquire the network because they liked what we were doing in the sport. But they wanted us also to replicate the model across other sports and say, can we build, you know, the same thing we've built with the lacrosse network across other verticals? And the acquisition process took time, but when it happened, I remember signing the paperwork and feeling this immediate, like, just, I mean, I was like relief and excitement to be like, wait, we're going to work full time on this now. And we don't have to worry about paying our bills. We don't have to worry about healthcare. Like we don't have to worry about it. We just get to work on this stuff. And the thing that was amazing was like, even though there was this moment of excitement and the sigh of relief and just being like, holy shit, like this is legit now. The next day, I remember after we went out to dinner the night we signed all the docs and we had dinner with my family. And then the next day I drove to our office, which was in downtown LA. I walked in the door. It was completely silent. Colin and Julian had their headphones on and they were working. And I was looking around and I was like, oh, all that just happened was we got granted the right and the ability to just work harder on this. And I think that was a really good realization and this amazing moment of, I think even though we had this incredible sense of accomplishment, it was more just validation and it was like tunnel vision at that time of, okay, now let's build it. Like now we're given the opportunity to build it.
Yeah.
Additionally, though, there was a moment of elation when we flew to New York all together for like a celebration. That was cool. That was like
super the optics
fun.
Of yeah. that trip to New York.
That was insane. Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. 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 They flew us all to New York to like have dinner with the team and like get kind of assimilated into the group. And they took us out to dinner and we had drinks and it was like, again, three kids in their early 20s who just sold a company in New York, like getting to do the dream of just making videos about lacrosse. Like it was awesome.
Yeah. It was a realization in like that we were really just working to keep working.
Right.
And that was worth it. Like that was the exciting part of it, was that we had the opportunity to keep going because it did feel like for a second we were on this roller coaster that had just come to the end and we were slowing down.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there and you're like, oh, okay, I guess, do I get out now? But then all of a sudden you start going back up and you're like, all right, here we go. Let's keep it going.
I think that's the important realization for everyone is like success. Like if it works, if your idea works, that just means that you're going to do more of it.
That's
right. Like like for Colin and I, if the Colin and Samir show works, right, which it has been now, and this year, like it's a really good year for what we're doing, that means we're going to make more shows, right? Because now we have to open up more, and we're sold out for the year basically. And so we have to open up more inventory. And that means we're potentially doing two episodes a week. So you better love what you're doing, because if it works, you're just doing more of it. And I think we're lucky in that we found a format that we enjoy doing and that we feel comfortable doing and that we want to do, because again, it worked, thankfully. And now we just get to do more of it. And so I think as an entrepreneur, you have to think about that as an early stage, especially content creator. It's like, if you hate the content you're making, the worst thing that will happen is that it works. And then you have to make that content over and over and over again. If you love what you're making, then, you know, you're in a good spot.
Yeah. Walt Disney used to say, we don't make movies to make money. We make movies to make more movies. And it's exactly what you're talking about.
Isn't the quote, we don't make movies to make money, we make money to make movies?
Probably. You're much smarter and have much more experience making movies and money than
anyway,
I do.
I love that. I love that quote. I think I posted that quote to my Instagram once, because I was so right when we got acquired. I think I posted that quote. So I'm fully aligned with that Walt Disney quote.
So at one point you guys slip into some level of complacency with the job that you now have, it seems like, from doing research. Mm-hmm. And in a New Jersey gym, you go up to Casey Neistat and have a conversation with him where he tells you, don't wait for it to happen. You just do it. It's a lot harder and it's a lot scarier, but it's the only way to stay ahead. Talk to me about that conversation with Casey Neistat.
You know, that conversation with Casey was actually, so what had happened was we found a ton of success with the Lacrosse Network. And I think it was that moment where we had found success, like within the company. The Whistle really like incubated us to a point and accelerated us to a point where it turned into a real business. Like we were profitable as a business and we were growing and we were hiring. And I think Colin and I both got kind of burnt out. You know, it was like 2017. So we've been doing it for almost 7 years. And it was like, whoa, are we going to just do lacrosse for the next, you know, 20 years? Like, is this it for us? And I think like,
we were burnt out, but really confident, I would add.
But I'm saying we were burnt out on lacrosse.
Burnt out on lacrosse and wondering about how far we could actually go within lacrosse, but really confident and excited about our ability to tell stories and build brands.
I think at the same time, it was when Casey started vlogging, and that intrigued us. Like we had never seen something where someone could take to YouTube and just tell stories about their life and make a movie out of their life every day. So I'd never seen anything like that. And I was fascinated. I was like, wow, that is cool. That's what YouTube is built for. And although we were doing similar stuff in lacrosse, I think we wanted to find what it meant to do that on the platform, just explore the platform more, be like, what is YouTube beyond lacrosse and beyond sport? And so we left the company. But we stayed on as a talent for the Lacrosse Network, as well as in a consulting role to help with some of the deals that we had put together. But I think it was pretty jarring for everyone at the company that we had left, because we were living the dream, right? It was like we make videos for a living. We had a lot of freedom in that company. We were making deals outside of lacrosse. We were working with brands like Nike and Under Armour, and it was like, again, I think it was pretty jarring. And even to my parents, it was like, are you positive? Like you guys have really good salaries, you have healthcare, like you're doing what you want to do. But we just had this feeling that we wanted to explore more. And it was at Colin's high school that Casey Neistat was speaking. And we just happened to be on the East Coast. So we were like, oh, it's definitely go. Like this guy's like the reason we want to explore YouTube beyond it. And to be honest, I think we edited the video that you're talking about pretty well, because when we first met Casey, we kind of just like vomited words onto him. Like we just walked up to him and we were like, we're calling it Samir, we do this. It's just kind of like this like really almost feeling like he had all the answers for us of what we were going to do next, because we were so confused. Like, what do we do now? Now that we left our company, like, what do we do? And that was the answer he gave. And I think you repeating it back is like one of the first times I've like really thought about what he said at that time. But he was right. Like, no one was going to tell us. I think we were looking to him for answers of like, what do we do now? And he was like, oh, that's not like, no one's going to tell you that. It's, you just have to make stuff and figure it out yourselves. And that was correct.
Yeah.
And I think we didn't know how long that was going to take. I think both of us thought like, oh, give it a year and we'll build something amazing. And, you know, 4 years later, here we are just kind of now finding our footing as Colin and Samir.
Yeah. And you said in a different interview that you might've been looking for him for validation in that moment to explain to him, look at how cool we are. Look at, and you wish you had asked him more pointed question. Is that correct? Well,
so we basically came up to him and we like tried to catch him up as fast as possible on the last 3 or 4 years of our lives. And when he left us, he said, congrats on all your success. And we were like, oh, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Why is he congratulating us?
Like, that's not what we wanted out of this interaction.
And then we said goodbye and then we felt very strange. And we started to realize that like this guy's had a massive impact on how we create, the way we live our lives. And we didn't even lead with like a thank you for your work or how much we enjoy it. We just immediately went straight to, here's everything you need to know about us.
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt very strange.
We had 30 seconds with him and we spent 27 seconds essentially talking about ourselves.
The last 3 seconds is the advice.
Yeah, yeah. 3 to 5 seconds was the advice he gave us. And I know that I think after that interaction, Colin and I wandered around Princeton, New Jersey in silence. And didn't talk to each other, I think, for like 3 or 4 hours.
We were with my parents too, and I think they were very confused.
They were really confused because they thought we would be so excited that we just met Casey. But I think it was like, it was a lot of like self-reflection after that of like, oh, okay, like whatever is next, like it almost was, there was some fear attached to it of like, whatever is next is just up to us. And like, we just left a company that we were, you know, running and successful in. And like, we literally just jumped and we're like, okay, here we are again. So I think there was a ton of mixed emotions after that. But I think I was more just disappointed in myself and how I treated that interaction, that I don't think I really heard what he said. But I think looking back on it now, like what he said was really good advice. And it took us 4 years to figure out who we were in the space and what we wanted to do. And it was only us that could figure that out.
What would you have asked him today?
I don't think I would have asked him much. I probably would have just said like, hey man, I appreciate what you've done for the space and like paving the path for a lot of creators. And that's probably it. I would probably ask him what excites him about the space.
He also, when we spoke to him, he had just taken a selfie with every single kid in the school.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I probably would have, and having gone to that school, I probably would have just said like, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah.
And speaking with all these kids and everything.
I mean, we're talking about like he stayed an extra hour plus to take a selfie with every kid at the Hunt School. And I remember also that, like watching that and being like, wow, that's pretty incredible that he didn't have to do that. Like they were clear about it. Like they were like, okay, like Casey has to leave. And he was like, no, I'll stay. I'll take a photo with everyone. So yeah. Wow. I mean, he's a really inspirational character. I think, he did pave the path for what YouTube looks like today and really helped a lot of storytellers understand that YouTube was the place that they could tell stories and also taught a lot of people what it meant to tell a good story. So, yeah, I mean, it's funny. I've had a couple of interactions with him after that. And I think although we've met a ton of people on YouTube, Casey is still someone who to me feels like it's still a person that I feel like starstruck around, like, and just like, oh my God, you know, and it's a really funny experience, but yeah, I think it was really good advice.
Well, I'm looking forward to the day you guys interview him or have him on the show because
that's a huge goal. Yeah. It's a huge goal. I think like there's a couple of moments we've had like that feel very surreal in interviewing creators or even having coffee with creators. And I think that's a moment that is definitely on the North Star list, is like interviewing Casey on the Colin and Samir show.
Yeah. And one of the things I've noticed about your interviews is just how good they are. As someone who does this myself, I'm constantly looking for people who are interviewing well and can interview well. So what are some of the things you guys think make up a good interview from the interviewer's side?
I mean, I think you've done a great job with this. I think just like digging in and understanding, a lot about the person you're interviewing, but then also navigating that person in a way that's going to provide the best experience for the audience, I think is really important. So like your job is essentially to like pull our story out of us in a way that hits the audience through whatever your mission is. And for us, our mission is to educate and empower creators. And so for us, like when we ask creators questions, we're doing it through an educational lens. We're trying to essentially pull their story out and shape it in a way that's going to support future creators. So that's what I would say is like, be very mission focused and understand your show, understand your audience, and then understand your guest as well. Like do the work prior, understand what stories they have, understand like things that are going to make them feel comfortable and make them feel like you did the work. Like you've done that, I think, really well today, that like we feel more comfortable and more intrigued by the fact that you know so much of our history. That means that you really did your research and you really care about, you know, how this interview is going to go.
Yeah, I think to Samir's point of like understanding your mission with the interview and the value prop, if we go an hour and a half with someone in an interview, you may only see 30 minutes on the YouTube channel. You may see an hour, right? Like it just depends on, you know, which parts of the interview actually hit the value prop right. that we feel like we have. So I think that's part of it too, is just like be really intentional about what goes in and what's left out.
I think also making the creator feel safe that you're gonna tell their story in a way that's representative of the conversation and representative of what they want to share. And I think that's been something that's been really, really good for us, is that when we do get to interview a creator, it kind of signals to other creators what type of interview we're gonna do. So not only is that for our audience, but it's also for future guests to look at and be like, I like the way that they're putting these interviews together.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I want to go to a big moment for the Colin and Samir show, and that's meeting Will Smith. What was that experience like?
That's another experience that I would say, first and foremost, I think like knowing that on YouTube, everyone is one video away is really interesting. Like we made a video about Will Smith, and by the time that video had 1,000 views, we had an email in our inbox from his team saying that he had watched it and he loved it. And I think no one would think that, you know, 1,000 views gets you a meeting with Will Smith, but it can on YouTube. And I think that's one of the most powerful things to recognize. It was in our newsletter today that we sent out, the published press. There's a line in it that's all about, it's not about how many people are watching, but it's about who is watching, right? So I think that's something that's really important to remember on YouTube, that you never know who's watching. And it's something that's gotten us in the door with a ton of people. And that's been really amazing. So meeting Will Smith, though, I think is like similar to what we were just mentioning about Casey. When we were on set, it was Will's 50th birthday. He was doing this, heli bungee jump with our friends, Yes Theory, in the Grand Canyon. And again, it was his birthday, his celebration. He was the star of the show, and Will treated everyone from the medic to the security guard, to his friends he brought from Philly, to us, to everyone the same. And with the same amount of respect, the same amount of energy, the same amount of, just kind of like gratitude. It didn't matter who you were. And I think that's something that I've seen in certain people who go really far in entertainment and in media, are people who are just like really good energy to be around. And they do not have like that ego complex around like who they're speaking to or anything. Like he was grateful that we were all there. But there was a surreal moment, like at his 50th birthday lunch, where there's like, I don't know, max 100 people in a room, and he's giving a speech, and Colin and I are like, what are we doing here? Like,
why are we this?
Yeah. Like, why are we standing next to Will Smith while he gives a speech on his 50th birthday? So,
I think though that a lot of that comes down to adding value. Like, you know, our video about him added value to him and his team. We ended up generating a relationship with Yes Theory because we were adding value to their projects, so that when the time came for them to go do this heli bungee with Will Smith, Samir and I were lucky enough to be invited and to, you know, hold cameras and work on strategy with them. And, again, it all comes down to just seeing where we added value to these different parties. And that's, I think, what ended up landing us at Will Smith's birthday party.
Was that before or after you guys almost quit Colin and Samir?
That was before.
Yeah, that was,
before. I mean, ending Colin and Samir was at the end of 2019. Colin and I had lunch, and funny enough, it's happened twice in our history now where we sit down, have lunch, and we're like, cool, let's move on. And then something amazing happens. That has happened twice. So I guess we have to do that more. but you know, this time around, it was the end of 2019. And, you know, we again burnt out 3.5 years of creating content with really limited monetization, doing odd jobs to make money. It was the same story as what we did with Lacrosse Network. And you know, what happened that was amazing was as 2020 turned, like as it became January, February, 2020, we had been talking to Samsung for a really long time and we had been wanting to work with them for a long time. And they were like empowering filmmakers that we really respected and that we thought were really cool. Casey being one of them, Max, Joseph being another one who we absolutely loved. And Colin had moved back to Philly. Mm-hmm. He had moved back. Like it was over. We had a video telling our audience that we were done, that we had in the back end ready to publish. And then we got this email from Samsung and their team being like, hey, Samsung really wants to work with you guys. Can you fly to San Francisco? And we were like, okay, maybe hold on that video. Let's go see what this is about. And we flew to San Francisco, met with them. They wanted us to present their new phone on stage with them at this event. And through the process of working with them on that project, they were like, we want you guys to join our creator team, which is called Team Galaxy. And that deal essentially gave us enough fuel to be a real company. And it was like, I think it was probably pretty stressful for you because you had just moved with your girlfriend to Philadelphia.
Yeah, and I backed up my entire life and brought it back to the East Coast.
And then the pandemic hit and we had all these projects we had to do and we thought we would just be like flying around, but it was really confusing if flights would be okay. And like, if you could travel and like Samsung had these projects that we were really excited to do and they still wanted to do them. And so it was like, well, we have to be in the same place.
I mean, yeah, it was around the time when like Tom Hanks got COVID, the NBA was canceled.
Right.
And we weren't really sure what was going to be happening with domestic flights. They were threatening a lockdown in LA. And I looked at my girlfriend, Madeline, and I was like, yeah, I think we're going to have to make a 24-hour decision and just pack our bags and go. So we packed one bag. Man, I remember like the day before her restaurant had just gotten shut down that she was working at. And we were like, okay, I guess this is really, let's just go.
Yeah.
We got to go and pack bags. And that was it.
What goes into such a monumental decision like that? How do you make that decision?
Well, I think it was honestly somewhat easy to make because I knew we had a runway for at least a year. And I knew that we had a aligned mission with Samsung. Like Samsung coming in and wanting to empower creators and feeling like they should be aligned with us to do that, put the light bulb off in my head that like what we've been doing the past couple of years, trying to educate creators is the right path, right? Like this has legs. And if a company like Samsung wants to align the mission like that, then like this really can take off. So it was a lot easier to make that decision with so much certainty, knowing we had a partnership like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's very hard to make decisions through uncertain times, uncertain right. mission statements.
Again, that creativity, the creativity doesn't flow if you don't have the confidence, right? Just to call back to the beginning of the episode, like the Samsung gave us the confidence that we could just take a step back. And I remember calling me at one point and being like, dude, you know what's crazy? Like we can just focus on making YouTube videos. And that was the first time in a couple of years since the Whistle acquisition that we had enough runway to just be like, oh yeah, okay, cool. We're just going to make YouTube videos. And so I think that was like a pretty crazy experience for us and moment that we were like, wow, we have enough stability to now actually sit down and just think about creativity. And when you're a bootstrapped startup of any kind, revenue is number one. You're just like panicked constantly trying to figure out revenue in the beginning. How are you going to pay the bills? And when you do that, you end up taking on a ton of projects that might be irrelevant. If you're doing video projects for money that you know, aren't your YouTube channel, you don't really want to then turn around and edit a video for your own YouTube channel. So that's what we were doing. And that's why we burnt out. We were just like doubling up on video work, one of which made like limited amounts of money and one of which made no money. And so it was like really confusing and hard to do. But once we had that stability, it was like, okay, now the creativity can flow.
Yeah, there were up until Samsung, there were too many projects that we would do for money where after we would say to each other, we're never doing anything like that again.
Yep.
Like, I'll rather get a job than do that.
Gotcha.
And that just happened one too many times, which led to us being like, okay, it's no longer worth it to keep going down this path if we can't focus on creativity and focus on making YouTube videos.
I want to talk then about the future of Colin and Samir. It's exciting watching you guys rise this year, but where do you guys see this going 5 years from now?
Yeah, I think, you know, we describe ourselves as an education media company. And I think based on our experience over the past 10 years, like, the thing that we're really passionate about is educating and empowering the next generation of creators. I think when you look 10 years ago, when we first took to YouTube, Colin and I, we were making content for our younger selves, right? Like, making lacrosse content was something we felt like we didn't have when we were younger. It was something that we wanted when we were younger. Now, today, the content we're creating is the same. 10 years ago, I would have loved to have a channel like this where I could hear from other creators, where I could learn from other creators, and where I could learn about what's happening in our industry to help me make decisions in my career, to help me find my purpose and path as a creator. And that's a lot of our goal and our mission. So now, like, the Colin and Samir show is kind of the hub where we do that on a week-to-week basis. But the products we're building outside of it are kind of our vision for the future is through our company, which is called Publish. So the first, you know, project that we've put out is called the Publish Press, which is a creator economy newsletter. We do three stories on Tuesday and Friday. Stuff that you hear about in the creator world and maybe stuff that you've not heard about that we're bringing to you. And we give you what happened, why it matters, and then, like, actionable advice around what you can do with this new information you just got. So we're trying to make sense of the news, and our tagline is making sense of your scroll. So there's, like, so much news in your scroll, and we feel like we can help make sense of it. And our next iteration outside of that is to think about rolling out curriculum, rolling out more courses. And hopefully, you know, the big dream is to start working with universities and high schools to actually roll out curriculum about modern day, you know, filmmaking, storytelling, and content creation. Because, like, when I was in film school, we didn't learn anything about this option. And I worked in Hollywood for a bit, and I would have loved to know that earlier that there was an option. And how do I make content for the internet? And I think whether or not you want to be a content creator, learning about storytelling and learning about putting yourself out there and learning about communicating and articulating ideas to other people, that's one of the most important skills to learn. So I think if we can build this into impacting a lot of people and at scale, like educating and empowering creators, whether or not you want to be a content creator or not, everyone wants to create something. So I think that's the big vision.
And almost every company now interacts with the creator economy in some sort of way. So I think understanding the inner workings of it, even having, like, some empathy for the experience of being a creator is going to be super valuable, whether you decide to be a creator or you just go and work at a company that interacts with them.
I love it. Thank you guys so much for your time. Where can people find more from you guys?
So if you want to watch us on YouTube, you can just type in Colin and Samir. We do the Colin and Samir show every Monday, occasionally on Wednesdays when we feel like it. And we also have a creator economy newsletter. It's called the Publish Press. Type in thepublishpress.com and you can subscribe. You'll get an email every Tuesday and Friday. So if you really like what you're hearing here, you could potentially hear from us on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays, and occasionally Wednesdays.
I'm a subscriber to all those and I highly recommend it. And they'll be in the show notes below. Thank you.
Amazing. Danny, awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
Colin and Samir, great guys. I really enjoyed getting to know them and getting to extract some of the insights from their time working in the creator economy. Thank you for listening. Thank you for just making it to this moment. It means the world to me. I hope you enjoyed this one. And if you have any thoughts about this episode, let me know on Twitter. I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.